This program is intended for individuals who are blind or are unable to read physical print and is brought to you by CABVI's Audio Information Services team.
Hello, welcome to Radio Reading Services weekly edition of the AARP magazine. I'm Joe Bickers. We'll pick up where we left off last week with our story, The Texas Elder Murders. The brothers looked at each other incredulously. "That doesn't sound like Mom," said Tom Bartell. "She would not imagine the loss of her wedding and engagement ring, or of the unusual ring with its parallel row of diamonds that she'd worn on her right finger for 50 years. When she woke up in the hospital, all three rings were gone. The sons asked to see a Plano detective who took their mother seriously. He thought her story sounded a lot like the bizarre tale that 93-year-old Kay Lawson had shared in 2017 of being attacked and smothered by a robber posing as a maintenance man. Meanwhile, the police, upon receiving the tip about Shamir Mir loitering in the parking lot at Preston Place, ran his license plate, found an outstanding arrest warrant for public drunkenness, and finally mobilized. On the afternoon of March 20, 2018, seven Plano officers in unmarked cars and trucks surrounded a silver sedan as it pulled into the parking lot of the apartment linked to the license plate. It was an unbelievably damning scene. Undercover officers watched and listened as Shamir Mir stopped near the entrance to toss into the complex's dumpster an ornate, oversized reddish-orange jewelry box that fell with a heavy thunk. When officers moved in to arrest him, they found a dead woman's jewelry in his hands. Shamir Mir was arrested on the outstanding warrant, though the police planned to question him about the attempted murder of Mary Bartell. Then a quick search of that discarded jewelry box led them to immigration papers with the name of Luthi Harris and a nearby North Dallas address. The house keys the Dallas police officers recovered from Shamir Mir's car fit the lock on the front door of Harris's home on Warm Breeze Lane. Inside, they discovered the 81-year-old widow's body. A deep bias against elderly women. Shamir Mir agreed to speak with both Plano and Dallas police, even after officers revealed they suspected him of serial jewelry theft and murder. In hours of recorded interrogations, he declared his innocence. He could not explain how he obtained distinctive jade and gold jewelry, private papers, or house keys that belonged to a murdered woman. Plano police also obtained a search warrant for his phone and found photos of the unique rings and gold crosses stolen from Mary Bartell. He'd posted them for sale online hours after she reported being attacked. After Collin and Dallas County officials held their unusual joint press conference to inform the public about the killing spree, Plano and Dallas police received hundreds of neglected reports of unsolved robberies involving unattended deaths of older Texans and cross-referenced them with Shamir Mir's cell phone data, security camera footage, and jewelry sales records show. Time and again, the information synced up. Though Bartell died in 2020, her riveting testimony was digitally preserved, and prosecutors also assembled literally hundreds of exhibits of actual and circumstantial evidence, such as Shamir Mir's cell phone pings to local towers, photographs of Bartell's rings and necklaces posted online, and Harris's jewelry and house keys. Today, Shamir Mir is serving two sentences of life without the possibility of parole for the murders of Luthi Harris and Mary Brooks. At press time, he faced 20 additional capital murder charges, but Dallas District Attorney John Cruzot has said he will likely drop all other capital murder indictments against Shamir Mir in his jurisdiction. 9 capital murder charges and 2 charges of attempted murder stand in Collin County, where the district attorney remained undecided on whether to seek a death sentence. But is Shamir Mir the only guilty one here? What of the housing complexes and investigators who time and time again whether consciously or unconsciously, ignored chilling evidence and declared the deaths natural. These crimes are horrifying, and the repeated failures of systems that should have been in place to protect the victims add to the tragedy, says Tina Tran, the AARP Texas State Director. A killer exploited a deep bias against the elderly, particularly women, in our society, which allowed a murderous spree to continue unquestioned and undetected. The callousness, particularly of the police and those who ran the facilities, should shake us to our core. A number of the victims' families have filed wrongful death suits against the facilities where their relatives lived. Attorney Trey Crawford represents 13 of those families. The owners and operators prioritize the profits of their private equity investors over the lives of the elderly residents they undertook to protect, he asserted in one suit. The current owners, Preston Place, was purchased by a private equity firm in 2018, have settled the suits and issued a statement acknowledging the long and difficult journey for the families and friends of the victims. They suggest that pending criminal indictments and Shamir Mir's guilty verdicts offer a welcome path towards finality and closure. Another apartment complex with three or more alleged attacks, Edgemere, also promptly settled wrongful death allegations with families. In a statement released after Shamir Mir's conviction for Harris's murder, Edgemere said that security is a primary focus and that they hope the trial will deliver a small measure of justice, comfort, and closure to all. The third, Tradition Prestonwood, home to 9 people prosecutors believe Shamir Mir killed, settled at least two lawsuits, and the families of other victims have been forced by the company into arbitration, where they are continuing to pursue claims of as much as $10 million each. In the filing to secure arbitration, Tradition argues that under the terms of their leases, the elderly residents were responsible for their own safety, and that Tradition had relied on the police and medical examiners to properly investigate the deaths. Tradition's parent company declined our request for interviews with CEO Jonathan Perlman or Jeff Wells, or to answer specific questions about the deaths. In a statement, the company said, in part, "The deaths by an alleged serial killer in people's homes and at multiple senior living communities in the Dallas-Fort Worth Metroplex is a true tragedy. The Tradition Prestonwood regards all of our residents as family." But for the victims' real families, the horror has continued unabated. You find out your mom's been murdered, then you find out it's a serial killer, and just every day the grief is overwhelming, says MJ Jennings, daughter of Leah Corkin. "And to realize that this horrible psychopathic serial killer was the last thing my mom saw on this earth, I still can't believe it." Systemic change in Texas has been slow. The Plano and Dallas detectives who worked on the cases and their superiors declined to be interviewed, citing the pending murder cases. A Plano police spokesperson pointed out the department had updated its policy for treating unattended deaths, but those 2019 changes related only to the proper removal of a body, not to the investigation. A Dallas police spokesman, in an emailed statement, insisted that, "Our goal is always to bring justice to victims, regardless of age." At the behest of victims' families in this case, and largely through the work of the nonprofit advocacy group and the families formed after the murders came to light, Secure Our Senior Safety, SOS, the Texas legislature passed a law that requires all medical examiners to inform next of kin whenever the cause of death is changed, after the daughter of one of Shamir Mir's alleged victims learned from another friend via a Facebook message that her mother's death was now being investigated as a murder. The push for further reforms from victims' families, SOS, and other advocacy groups and politicians has only just begun. Meanwhile, Karen Harris, whose mother, Miriam Nelson, had tried to report an intruder before he returned to kill her, can't stop replaying the attack on her mother in her mind. As the list of likely murder victims has lengthened, her unease was replaced by a sense of outrage, shared with other victims' families, at what she considers the ageist biases of police and facilities that had been home to their murdered relatives. "It's very frustrating hearing all of this," said Harris, who helped form SOS. "It seems like the story should have been on everyone's lips in Dallas. They're saying this is the most prolific serial killer in Texas history. If these were toddlers or children or co-eds, do elderly lives not matter?" This was written by Lise Olson, who's an investigative journalist in Texas and the author of Code of Silence, Sexual Misconduct by Federal Judges, The Secret System That Protects Them, and The Woman Who Blew the Whistle. Our next story today, from the This Is 50 section, "Is She Good for My Son? How to Cope with a Child's Worrisome Romance Without Alienating Your Child." When my son Gabe was in college, he invited his girlfriend, I'll call her Tiffany, to our home in Vermont for Thanksgiving. Let's just say it was stressful. For 5 days, Tiffany clung to Gabe, but she never piped up during family conversations or pitched in with housework. Instead, she seemed closed off, obsessively checking her social media feeds. I kept asking myself, why is Gabe with her? I just didn't see how someone like that could possibly be good for my son. On the day of our holiday dinner, Gabe was in the kitchen tending the turkey, my husband was vacuuming, and I was setting the table for a dozen guests. Where was Tiffany? On the couch, FaceTiming a friend. My worry and irritation got the better of me, and I stomped into the kitchen to confront Gabe. Do you think she could help out? He shot right back, I don't want to hear it. Years later, I still regret my outburst. Everyone knows it's bad form to criticize your child's boyfriend or girlfriend. Scientific studies of the phenomenon are scarce, but anecdotal evidence suggests it's quite common for a child to bring home a sweetheart who rubs parents the wrong way. One survey by a British newspaper found that 1 in 3 parents of teens had disapproved of someone their child was dating. Sometimes a parent's irritation can even be a red flag for serious problems, including abuse. So there are times when it's right to speak up. But how do you know when to say something and what to say? For insight, I interviewed experts in family dynamics. Here's their advice. Prepare. Figure out exactly what bothers you about the person, counsels psychotherapist Judith R. Smith, author of Difficult, Mothering, Challenging Adult Children Through Conflict and Change. Crystallize your concern in advance, she says. Maybe your worry, as I did with Tiffany, that the person is taking advantage of your child's good nature. Check your bias. Are you judging the person based on something that has nothing to do with their character, such as their accent or social class? If you discover that your reaction is irrational or superficial, silence is golden. Pick your moment. Once you clarify an issue that may need discussion, choose a calm time and a neutral place to address it. That is, don't confront them in the midst of holiday mayhem. Deal with big issues, especially with young adults, when you're not reactive, Smith advises. And talk things over in a neutral location, during a car ride, walking, or while out for coffee. Ask questions. No matter how aggravated you find your kid's partner, try to stay open-minded and curious about the relationship rather than condemning it, advises University of South Carolina Buford sociology professor Deborah J. Cohan, author of Welcome to Wherever We Are, a memoir of family, caregiving, and redemption. You don't want to create a them-against-the-world Romeo and Juliet scenario where you run the risk of bringing the couple closer together. Instead, Ask what kinds of activities they share or what your child admires in their partner, and really listen to their answers. A better understanding of why your child values their partner can help you learn to value that person too. Make peace. If you still feel you must raise your concerns, begin by telling your child you want to share some thoughts, advises Antioch University clinical psychology professor Martha B. Strauss, co-author of The Lost Art of Listening, How Learning to Listen Can Improve Relationships. Reaffirm your unconditional love for them. Then, as briefly as possible, address your main concerns. Don't dwell or repeat yourself, Strauss says. In all likelihood, your child knows how you feel anyway. End by saying again how much you love them and that you know the choice of a friend or mate is theirs. After this talk, your child may decide to speak with their sweetheart about problematic behavior, or not. You can't control that, but you can control your own reactions. Know when to intervene. There is one situation that requires you to act, spotting signs of abuse, such as excessive jealousy or attempts to control your child. If there has been a threat of violence of your child on your child, or your child has communicated to you they don't feel safe, step in, Strauss urges. In extreme cases, this might mean contacting the police, even helping your child get a restraining order. For more on how to recognize an abusive relationship, you or your child can call the National Domestic Violence Line 1-800-799-SAFE, where counselors are available 24/7. Thankfully, my aggravation with Tiffany didn't signal any deeper trouble. She was just a reticent young person who had zero interest in housework, qualities Gabe already knew about and accepted. And it works for them. The two are still together in unconventional roles. He handles the cooking and cleaning while she cares for the pets and manages their bills, long-term planning, and investments. And as Tiffany has matured, she has outgrown her reticence and her obsession with her phone has lessened. I love her and I love seeing my son happy. And they both pitch in now when they're visiting me. Not only can we parents learn to change, but if we're lucky, our kids' partners can too. That's written by Robin Weston. Our next story today, The Moment That Changed My Life. In their recent memoirs, these celebrities reveal personal and career events that transformed their lives. Actor William Shatner, age 91, on his 2021 Blue Origin spaceflight. I had thought that going into space would be the ultimate catharsis of that connection I had been looking for between all living things, that being up there would be the next beautiful step to understanding the harmony of the universe. In the film Contact, when Jodie Foster's character goes to space and looks out into the heavens, she lets out an astonished whisper. They should have sent a poet. But when I finally arrived out there, the splendor was absent. That feeling wasn't the warmth or glow that required poetry to express it. It was ominous. It was the opposite of life. It was among the strongest feelings of grief I have ever encountered. It reinforced tenfold my own view on the power of our beautiful, mysterious, collective human entanglement, and eventually it returned a feeling of hope to my heart. In this insignificance we share, we have one gift that other species perhaps do not. We are aware, not only of our insignificance, but of the grandeur around us that makes us insignificant. That allows us perhaps a chance to rededicate ourselves to our planet, to each other, to life, and love all around us if we seize that chance. Actor Ralph Macchio, age 61, on his audition for his career-making role in The Karate Kid. The sound of a train whistle blared as a westbounder entered the Babylon station. It was audition day, and there I was in my white Tom Petty concert shirt and black members-only type jacket, stepping onto a Long Island Railroad train to New York City. I was on my way to meet one-on-one with the Oscar-winning director John Avildsen at his apartment in the Upper East Side of Manhattan. As I rode uptown in my cab, I wondered if, maybe, word of my performance in The Outsiders had gotten me past the first round. That had to be it, right? Not so fast. When I arrived, I found a hallway packed with teenagers of all shapes and sizes. I reset my ego, took a deep breath, and made my way toward the door at the end of the hall. When it was time to read the scene, I was feeling pretty good with the material, and the dialogue seemed to fit nicely in my mouth. In hindsight, it was probably another sign that this role was a good match. I just played it as naturally as I could, being honest with my reactions, allowing my East Coast cockiness to bleed through. We read it only once. That was it. No adjustments, no notes. He lowered his reading glasses and said in an impressed, almost surprising tone, "Wow, you're a good actor." Now, that's never a bad thing to hear on the first date. A proud feeling of jittery excitement was building in my chest. Then he ended the meeting with, "I can't guarantee anything for certain, but if I were you, I'd start taking some karate lessons." That got me up and out of the chair with a jolt. A pretty damn good sign, don't you think? Actor Jennifer Lewis, age 65, on discovering at age 58 that her boyfriend was a con man. My boyfriend Tony and I had just walked in the door when I heard a horn blow outside. It was my friend Brenda, who begged me to hop onto the passenger seat. The night before, she had gone home, scrounged the internet like a black Nancy Drew, and discovered all of Tony's darkest secrets. She opened her laptop. She turned it to face me, and in big bold letters, I saw a headline that read, "California man sentenced to 2 years in prison for fraud." Directly under it, as clear as day, was a picture of Tony. Expletive. No, 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 God, no. Nothing made sense, and yet everything finally made sense. All those times he stared at me in that sick haze, I mistook it for sweetness. I had to get this phony out of my home. After much internal back and forth, I leaked the story to TMZ. I wanted to warn other women. I took his ass to court, and he was sentenced to 8 years. And me? I lived happily ever after. Actor Paul Newman, on starting a years-long affair with future wife Joanne Woodward. I was doing the Broadway play Picnic when, already married with a wife and child, I run into a sensational 23-year-old girl named Joanne, who is understudying the play's female lead and some other parts. The play has a long dance scene that triggers the primary onstage romance. The kid, Newman, has no physical grace, so back in the wings, Joanne, pearly of skin and sensitive to touch, teaches him how to dance. It was the introduction of Joanne and her sexuality into my life. Joanne gave birth to a sexual creature. She taught him. She encouraged him. She delighted in the experimental. My ethical self was overwhelmed by the discovery of much more powerful appetites. Betraying my marital vows to my wife Jackie seemed insignificant against that discovery. We left a trail of lust. Hotels and motels and public parks and bathrooms and swimming pools and ocean beaches and rumble seats and Hertz rental cars. I don't know that Joanne and I sat around questioning our morals. There was a passion in what we had. Something had happened to us, and we had no idea where it was going. One day I determined to commit to her, and the next day, faced with having to do it, I find I couldn't bring myself to break away from Jackie. But then each time there'd be an evening of great passion and affection with Joanne, I changed my mind again. My vacillations went on for years. Actor and rapper Ice-T, age 64, on realizing that fame meant the end of his criminal life. For a while, I did try to have it both ways, keep one foot in the entertainment business and one in the criminal life. But there was this one day when I was out to steal a part for my Porsche. That was when I realized I was done. I was finished breaking the law. I needed a part for my car's convertible roof mechanism. It cost only about $500, but street hustler's mentality, I didn't want to expletive pay for it. Some of my homies had stolen a Porsche, and they were supposed to bring me the part, but I was taking too expletive long. Finally, I said, "Yo, tell me where the boosted Porsche is parked, and I'll go steal the part myself." I went on this solo mission. The car was in the parking structure of an apartment building and had a canvas tarp over it. I got the ratchet in my waistband and I was focused. I made a beeline straight for the Porsche, peel off the canvas tarp, pull out my ratchet, and suddenly I hear screaming. I whirl around and there's a bunch of kids pointing at me from the apartment building, shouting so expletive loud it startled me. A few are coming outside running toward me. My first thought is that they spotted me. Someone's about to call the cops, and I need to get the expletive out of here. But as they ran up closer, I see the paper and pens in their hands. "Ice-T, Ice-T." Autographs. "Yo, sign this, Ice." I had the ratchet in my hand. I wasn't even thinking of myself as the rapper Ice-T. I was back in the zone of my criminal persona, Crazy Trey. Before I could even blink, a bunch of their parents are running outside, and they all want autographs too. Nobody suspected I'd been in the middle of trying to rip off a car part. The residents naturally assumed it was my own Porsche. I realized I can't do this anymore. I'm too famous to steal. Model Paulina Poroskova, age 57, on life under communism and being seen but not heard. I first became famous at the age of 4 as a political pawn between the West and the East. A year earlier, when I was 3 years old, my parents left our native Czechoslovakia to escape the invading Soviets. It was 1968. They fled across the border on a motorcycle and ended up in Sweden, hoping for a better life. They had left me with my grandmother, intending to come back for me once they were settled in their new home. Well, that's all the time we have for this week. I'm Joe Bickers, wishing everyone a wonderful week.